Welcome back to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. And with me today is Mr. Matt Thompson. Matt, how's it going, bud?
Good, man. Good to podcast with you again. It's been a while. We got the top 100 MLB player list going in the background. And as you can guess, it's a pretty terrible list. But ready to talk some dynasty and deep redraft plays today. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, we're going to go, you know, we're wanting to think of some topics before the show started that would actually help some deep league players. And I know everybody nowadays is listening to podcasts or reading work that has all the positional tiers and top plays at each position, et cetera. But we're trying to, you know, keep some analysis going for some of the deep league folk and, you know, dynasty and keeper league guys as well, so that we can, you know, help those guys out. I mean, we have keeper and dynasty leagues going on all the time. We got to help those guys out. So we're going to go through each and every team, and we're going to kind of do it rapid fire style. We're not going to go too long on each one. I know each and every team sounds like it would take 4 hours, but Matt and I are just going to give a guy on each, a hitter for each team that's going outside the top 300 in ADP right now. So if you're doing a startup dynasty, or if you're doing a deep league, if you're in one of the 20 or 30 teamers with, you know, 30 man roster spots, you'll be able to get some gems here outside the top 300. So, let's let it ride, Matt. Let's go to the Baltimore first. Actually, yeah. No, let everybody know where you can be found on Twitter. I don't want to just skip you.
Oh, sure. MD Tomp FWFB.
Boom. All right. Let's go to Baltimore. You can start off with your hitter.
I'll go with the catcher. I know catchers are hard to find, but they have no reason not to give Chance Cisco regular playing time this year. I know he has some defensive questions, and I understand that, but he's too advanced for AAA. But I think you're looking at a catcher who can hit 275, 280. And I think that by default gives him top 10 to 12 upside for the position. So Chance Cisco is my guy there. I'm trying to see where he's going right now.
Outside the top 600.
Yeah, the last 30 days he's going 529.
Oh, okay. A little bit higher. Yeah, yes. He's outside the top 40 catchers, which I think is absolutely egregious. I know you and I have spoke about him multiple times, but I think he, like we talked about pre-show, is just being forgotten, and nobody amongst all this dread of catchers, he's just right. Somebody that should get ample playing time and has the ability to certainly be a top 10 catcher. So
he hits 275 with what, 10 homers, and that's a top 10, 12 guy, right?
Maybe more. I mean, he hits at a really good ballpark in Camden Yards. I can't see a reason why he can't hit maybe a little bit more than that. But yeah. Either way, I think that's a great option. I would definitely choose him. Cedric Mullins will be my guy. In 2018, not a very good small sample size. You know, at about 200 at bats, he only had 4 home runs, 2 stolen bases. But I think, you know, he's set to lead off, at least right now, according to Roster Resource. He's going just outside the top 300. So this is a little bit of a cheating pick here, but I think somebody that's going to hit in the leadoff spot for, you know, an offense that isn't very good, obviously, on paper, you know, still could end up getting a good amount of runs and stolen bases. He has a pretty decent speed score. I think it's somebody that could end up giving you 20 stolen bases. Definitely a deep league guy, like, you know, everybody on this list will be, but I kind of like Cedric Mullins based on where he's going.
Yeah, we talked about Mullins. He should hit leadoff too. I don't know if you touched on that. He's their best option to hit leadoff besides VR. And, you know, I think Mullins, they should give him the green light. So I think, 275 with 20 steals is entirely possible. And that's a solid player.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that they're a batting average run and stolen base guy that you can get outside that spot. And Jonathan VR, I mean, we're not talking shallow formats, but Jonathan VR is going at a very economical cost, somebody that you should definitely be.
Oh, definitely.
Be thinking about for sure. But,
oh, yeah.
Let's move on to the Red Sox, who admittedly don't have a lot of guys.
No,
top 300.
It's a tougher to find one, but there's a candidate that jumps out to me, and it's Michael Chavis. And I think it's going to take some injuries for him to get there. Third baseman in the minor leagues, probably a first baseman long term. But again, Chavis has, you know, 30 homer pop, but he's kind of a tweener guy in the sense that he's not really good enough defensively for third, not good enough or not athletic enough, not quick enough laterally to play second base, which is probably the best position for his body. And then he's at first base, he's too short and might not have enough pop, even though I just said he hit 30 homers. But so Chavez is, but I do think he could play left field if he had to. I know they have a lot of options with Holt and Steve Pierce and Nunez around, but I think Michael Chavez could break into the lineup just because we know he can hit. He's got the track record, former first round pick, had the steroid, had the PED suspension. They kind of brought him down. Cost him a World Series ring, to be honest with you, because he would have been up last year if he didn't have that. So I'll go with Chavez.
Kind of not opposite of that point, but I'm going to go with Eduardo Nunez. He's just last year he was hampered by injuries. Right now, going outside the top 300, he's 433 right now.
Yeah, that's
stupid. Offers some versatility. You know, has some speed. I think that, you know, especially based on his second half where he started to get a little bit more healthy. I think that we could see a year where, you know, if he ends up eclipsing 450, 500 plate appearances again, we could be looking at another 20 stolen bases, double digit home runs, pretty decent batting average. I think that he's a really, I mean, this is two guys in a row now where I'm saying outside the top 300 to take a batting average, runs and stolen base producer. But I really like these two, especially in the day and age where, you know, stolen bases is something that's hard to come by. And, you know, Nunez is somebody that's been pretty established at this point. He's only 32. It's not like he's 37, 38 or something. And he always has been somebody that can put the bats to the ball. So I really like Nunez based on where he's going.
Yeah, I think Nunez makes sense. And I think, I don't know if they're completely sold on Rafael Devers. I think Devers is going to pop off this year personally.
So do I. Yeah, I like
but,
him a lot.
But I think, I don't know if Boston's entirely sold. So I can see that being an option.
All right, you're right. Move on to the next team.
Oh, yeah.
All right. The Chicago White Sox, who you got?
I'm cheating a little bit, but he's going 297, so I think I'll let it slide. But Kelvin Herrera, he should be the closer for them. Obviously, saves are a commodity in the fantasy game. He's going to have some competition with the healthy Nate Jones, so however long that lasts, and then Alex Colome. But Herrera, you know, he's had some health concerns of his own lately. Especially last year, he got traded to Washington, lost the closer job after, you know, obviously after coming over there with Doolittle being there. But if you want a dart throw for 20 saves, I'll go Herrera, but I'm not all that confident, but I don't want to bend the rules too much with what our qualifications are. But, it's not a very exciting group, but if it has to be a bat, Daniel Palka can hit 30 homers. Does that count?
Well, I actually don't mind Daniel Palka. You know, speaking of bending the rules, though, we were supposed to only go hitters. So yeah, I'll accept your Kelvin Herrera pick. That's fine. And I'll even accept Daniel Palka as well, because I actually do like him for multiple reasons. But Yonder Alonso is going to be my selection. I think that his change or adjustment in his approach starting in 2017 is legit. He's going to get ample playing time in Chicago. I think that he's going to hit somewhere in the vicinity of 30 home runs again. And, you know, his batting average won't sink you. I think league average batting average last year was about 250. Last year he hit 250. The year before he hit 266. So even if he's league average and batting average, I think, you know, his walk rate's good enough to be a helpful in on-base percentage formats. And the power's legit, like I've already mentioned. So no need to go a long time on this. I think a 30 home run guy-ish that you can get outside the, you know, top 300 right now is a really serviceable piece for you. Let's move on to Cleveland. Do you have somebody in mind in Cleveland?
There's a lot of guys. I'll give my one, and then I'll let you give yours, and then I'll touch on a few other ones, because there's a lot of guys here that I like. But if I have to go somebody right now, I'll go Greg Allen. I think he's got the profile to be a strong contributor in the stolen base department, obviously, which is a very coveted thing. He's going to have all the playing time he can get due to that outfield situation right now, which is Leonis Martin and Tyler Naquin right now, and Greg Allen. They have a lot of other options like Jordan Luplow, and Bradley Zimmer's hurt, and I guess Kipnis kind of counts as an outfielder if they want to get creative. Oscar Mercado. Matt Joyce, none of those guys sound great. So Greg Allen obviously has the defensive chops and the wheels to, you know, take that job and run with it. There's nothing wrong with the guy hitting ninth in the American League, because Cleveland does have a good lineup if everybody's healthy with Lindor back. So he could be hitting right in front of Lindor and Ramirez and stuff, even if he hits ninth. So I'll go Greg Allen, and I'm kind of amazed he's not getting more hype than he actually is.
Yeah, I agree. Greg Allen had a stretch last year. I'm going to look it up, but he had, yeah, he had 8 stolen bases in the month of August and 7 in the month of September. I, you know, did a couple of different write-ups for various places, and Greg Allen always seemed to pop up. You know, as I'm looking at box scores and watching games each day, he just was always somebody that was popping up, especially late in the season. So I don't understand. I mean, he stole 20 bases. He's like the new Rajah Davis. He stole 20 bases in 265 at bats last year. Right now he's penciled in to the starting left field job. He's a switch hitter. I mean, there's definitely a possibility that he could steal 30 bases and nobody would even think about it. I mean, honestly, he has the speed to steal even more than that, but it's just mostly based on playing time and what happens there. So I'll go with Leonis Martin. I know he's not a very flashy player, but based on where he's going, I like the fact that he's hanging at the top of the lineup for this team. It's something that I'm definitely going to be in for. I'm not necessarily in dynasty formats. I'm not going to, you know, go in a startup dynasty and take Leonis Martin pick 300, but, in redraft leagues where I'm in, you know, I'm in multiple deeper formats, you know, somebody like him who's going 400th right now is, worth it to me. I think he has the potential to hit, you know, he hasn't hit 20 home runs in a season, but I think he has the potential to hit 15 to 20 home runs. And he's always been somebody that's been able to take a walk. You know, I mean, it's really just been more injuries and playing time. And the one year they had over 500 at bats, he had 15 home runs, 24 stolen bases and a 250 batting average. It's not terrible. I would take that out of a 400 top 400 pick. And, you know, to kind of piggyback on, you know, other guys that are options on this team, Kevin Plawecki, I think, is a really interesting piece. I know Roberto Perez is in the starting slot at catcher right now, but Plawecki always has had pretty decent skills. And I think Plawecki could be somebody that, you know, potentially could help you out at catcher, especially if something were to happen to Perez. And obviously Jason Kipnis is rolling around there too.
Yeah. Kipnis for me is very underrated. I'm not a Kipnis guy, but I mean, you don't really have to be right now to get him.
No, he's going right. Actually, he's going after Leonis Martin.
Which... Yeah, it's kind of crazy because Kipnis, I mean, yeah, he's not going to, you know, catch on fire or like, you know, burn anything up, but he's hitting. What's wrong with Kipnis hitting 260 with 15 to 20 homers as an everyday second baseman? I mean.
Yeah, he's pretty underrated right now. I don't get it.
And then I want to throw a shout out to Yu Chang, because if the Lindor injury is substantial, I'm not sure Chang plays shortstop, but they could get a little bit creative with what they do. But even if Lindor is healthy at the beginning of the season, I like Chang to fill in like that Jairo Munoz role for St. Louis, kind of play all the corners and a little bit of second base. A little bit of shortstop utility option, and I think that has some value. And I think Chang has the bat right now to hit 20 home runs at the major league level. And we had some eyes on him for Prospects Live over it when he was in Arizona for the Fall League. And Jason Panini, our former major league scout, he thought he was a plus defender at third base. So you can look for him to maybe, you know, if Kipnis moves to the outfield, if Martin gets hurt or something, and they put him – Jose Ramirez back at second base like they did last year, they could put Chang at third and he could play there. This is a team to watch in spring training. Because Tyler Naquin can win the job. We've seen him before get hot, right? Back when he was at Texas A&M, I mean, this shows how long ago it was. They were in the Big 12 still, and he won 2 batting titles in college.
He was a first rounder too.
He was. I believe. Yeah. Yep, first round pick in 2012 in middle for 15th overall pick, I believe. I think it was a little bit higher than, like, he was middle of the first rounder. So I like Naquin. He showed a little bit of what he can do. I always have a soft spot for Jordan Luplow, and I don't know why. I kind of get, like, a strong Ryan Ludwig vibe from him. And remember, Ryan Ludwig was pretty solid for a few years. So I like that. And then another deep guy to watch is Oscar Mercado could swipe 30 bags if he gets playing time. And he's probably the best defender outside of Bradley Zimmer in the org, who's another guy. But Zimmer can't stay healthy, and Mercado's he's a guy that he'll play anywhere he goes because he's got that coach's kid mentality, and you know, teams love him, and if he's on a roster, he's going to play. So I think he could be a sleeper too. So there's a couple for deep dynasty or AL only that we just rattled off now. So
I wouldn't forget about Bradley Zimmer either. It goes without saying that he has uber potential. He's definitely just, you know, somebody that has
the highest potential of anyone we've talked about on this list already.
Absolutely. And I think that there's no reason to forget about him right now. He's still extremely young, somebody to at least keep, you know, throw a flyer on or whatever. But let's move on to Detroit. I You know, I'll throw Nico Goodrum in there. I don't really want to go into it, though, because I think that his ADP is going to start getting higher. He does offer some flexibility, but right now he's going like right at the cusp of 300. And, you know, I'm going to avoid talking about him. I think I'm going to go with Jaime Candelario, who I just forever will like. He's not spectacular in any one category, but, you know, even in a year in 2018 that, you know, essentially was his rookie year, that he, you know, suffered through some injuries, had a wrist issue, you know, he was able to hit almost 20 home runs, and, you know, mind you, that came with a lot of playing time, but he's not a 224 hitter, and
no.
You know, he possesses really good plate skills. I don't know where the 30% strikeout rate came from, but I think that he's going to rebound in a pretty decent way. Now, he's not a big power hitter, so I wouldn't expect him to rebound much more than, you know, than the 19 home runs that he hit. But I still think, you know, 20 to 25 home runs with 260 to 270 batting average is well within the cards here, going outside the top 420-ish the last 30 days. I think that he has a ton of skills that a lot of people just don't really know about because the stat line wasn't too impressive last year.
Yeah, and like you said, when Candelario was a Cubs prospect, he was blocked by, like, a ton of players.
A ton of people, yeah.
And we always used to talk when we did our prospect pod back in the day. At least I had the thing. I can find some old write-ups. Candelario, for me, was a league-average third baseman that just couldn't break in. And I think everything we've said in that mindset is determined to be true. Yep. Right? I mean, he's miscast as a leadoff guy, which they have him pegged as right now for Detroit because the roster's so poorly built.
Yeah.
But I like Candelario. But my guy is a guy that I'm not really high on from a – real life standpoint, but from a fantasy baseball standpoint, give me all the shares of Kristen Stewart, man, because I think this guy can hit an easy 25 homers, and he has a strong walk rate, doesn't strike out. I think he gets the big power corner outfield tag. I think everyone automatically assumes that he strikes out more than he does, but he's not that guy at all. So I'll take Kristen Stewart, who's going around pick 352 right now in the last 30 days or so. Highest pick is 288, so not a lot of people are on him, and I really like the power and OBP skill set here. And if he hits in the front of the lineup, and if Miggy can stay healthy, got a lot of chances for some runs. I mean, he's not going to contribute anything in the speed department, but when you're getting somebody at pick 350, I mean, everyone's got warts at this problem at this point. I mean, think of like what the kind of player like Eric Thames is, because that's kind of what Kristen Stewart can be if you give him regular time, which is fine.
I dig it. I like the pick, and I don't know how you feel about Nico Goodrum. We can talk about him for a second, but
yeah.
He deserves to be going ahead of the two of them. I'm wondering, though, like, do you think he stays where he's going? I feel like he's going to be somebody that's like a top 250 pick once, like, spring rolls around.
He's already popping up the last 30 days. He's in the 286 range now. He's been picked as high as 225. So I think you're right. He's got dual position eligibility, which helps. I like Goodrum for what he is, but even if he repeats last year, which I think is perfectly reasonable expectation, he's going to provide value for you. So yeah, it's hard to get too excited about Goodrum, but he's not terrible. And at that late, he's going to get playing time. He's going to hit in the middle of the order. So why not?
I think he kind of has like 2015 potential.
He does actually. Yeah, I agree.
Yep. He kind of reminds me of Chris Young a bit because he doesn't. I mean, he does walk a bit, but he does have a lot of strikeout in his game. And, you know, while the batting average won't really be there, I mean, for a few years there, we were really counting on Chris Young as a, you know, 2020 contributor. And, I mean, mind you, I don't ever expect Goodrum to shoot up draft boards to a top five round pick at any point. But Goodrum is very interesting to me just because of that just speed and power combo that you obviously always love in fantasy. But let's move on to Houston. So who's your guy for Houston?
I'm still looking for one. If you have one right now, that'd be great. But I'm leaning towards Josh Reddick right now. I think he's overlooked because Kyle Tucker is going higher than him in drafts, which I get, but I also don't get at the same time because Reddick's a pretty solid player, and he's not going to win you a league. But he's very similar to like Melky Cabrera has been the last few years, like production-wise.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with guys like that. You need guys like that on your roster, so... I'll go Reddick, and he still provides good defensive value, too, to keep him in the lineup. So when he's healthy, so Reddick.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to go with Tony Kemp, and that was just for – I mean, Ryan, he's almost like not somebody that you really can count on in any factor or way. Just to put it in perspective, there's nobody from this offense that's going outside the top 300. It's a very marginal group of players, which is,
Right. I do want to throw some love out to A.J. Reed and Derek Fisher if they can get traded.
Yeah. I think Derek Fisher is a little bit more valuable right now. I just don't know if it's ever going to happen for Reed. I definitely still have some love for Fisher.
But he's hard to quit because he's an interesting fantasy option, but it might be time to close the door on those two, which is hard to say because I was as big of AJ Reed fan as I can get. I still think he can produce at an above average clip, but he's not going to get the chance here. So
yeah, I'll throw Tyler White out there. I mean, he's going through 30 picks ahead of the 300 mark, but Tyler White is being underrated in fantasy. So that'll be my value pick from this team. I mean, really everybody is going out just way high and deservedly so at this point, but that's just where we're at with a team like Houston. You want to move on to Kansas City, who I know has a ton of options.
Yeah, and it's got one of my favorite options, long-time options, Jorge Soler. I will never give up on Jorge Soler. I think he's a good hitter. Obviously, he's got 20-25 homer pop just because of the build. He can DH in Kansas City, which in theory should keep him healthier, but it hasn't worked out that way. I think he's got strong plate skills. I'm on the Jorge Soler train. I really am. I still think he can hit 290 with 25 homers. I really do. I might be drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit, but I've been irrational about Soler since he came up, so I'll go Soler.
Soler's definitely my favorite option of the people going, outside the top 300 for them. Chris Owings, I suppose, will be my next option, or Brett Phillips, one or the other. I like both of them for various reasons. I think both of them are worth a flyer late in drafts. I was hoping to see Adalberto Mondesi down here, but apparently he's going in the top 50. So
rumor has it he might be going a little higher than that. Although he has backed up a little bit. He's getting into my price range. He's going in the mid-40s lately from what I've seen. So
yeah, he's going to be the death of me. I lose sleep over this guy. It's bad.
I've came around on Mondesi. Like, I've done like a deep dive, and I kind of think the floor is so high regardless of what he, you know what I mean? I don't know.
No, you want to know what swayed me is I read a really good piece. I'm trying to remember where I read it. So I can give them credit for it, but it was, I can't remember where the piece was, but the piece was essentially comparing, just in a very unique and detailed way, Jose Reyes's beginning of his career and Adalberto Mondesi's to this point. It's a lot more similar than you might think. Actually, Mondesi's doing better in a lot of ways than Jose Reyes was at the beginning of his career. And I mean, Jose Reyes, for those that are young to playing fantasy baseball, Jose Reyes was a first round player for multiple years before he started hitting an injury track record or whatever. But it was like just it was kind of eye-opening to me. So, I mean, after all this Mondesi hate, I'm still going to stand pat with not drafting him in the top 50. But at the same time, like, I lose sleep over it because he could easily be a first-round player coming into next year, and I wouldn't be shocked in any way. So, of course, the Kansas City deep dive has to end up talking about Mondesi because
it really does. Yeah.
That's the way everything has to go.
For the back half of the American League, you can go first because I've been going first for the first half, and it gets harder. So you go first.
Oh, no worries. So the next team we're going to talk about is the LA Angels. Let me pull my projections really fast, and I'll tell you who I want. I like Jonathan Lucroy. Oh, Justin Bour. Yeah, Justin Bour, obviously. Outside of the top 400, I like his situation in LA. He's hopefully going to be playing on the strong side of a platoon. I know Albert Pujols is still rolling around over there, but I don't think they would have signed Bauer or Bohr if they didn't expect for him to be playing a significant amount. He's still good against right-handed pitchers. I think that he's criminally priced right now based on where he's going. So I really like that. Of anybody, that's probably the top option I would go with. Cole Calhoun's still rolling around there, but I think Bohr is by far the best option.
I like Bohr. He would have been my pick. I'll go Zach Cozart. I know you're not a Cozart guy, but he broke out and hit first and had a really strong offensive year before leaving Cincinnati. Got hurt real quick when he was in LA. I think he's going to be a strong source of batting average, and I think he can hit 15 or so homers. And there's a small chance that he hits at the top of the order and in front of guys like Trout and Upton and the aforementioned Bohr, and I think that's a good spot to hit. So I'll go Cozart, I'm going to throw an honorable mention to David Fletcher because I'm kind of intrigued. And
how did I know you were going to talk about David Fletcher?
But the real guy that I want to touch on, if the Fletcher thing doesn't work out, is Luis Rengifo, because that's a guy that I'm a little bit intrigued on because of the stolen base output. He's not a plus runner.
How does he play, though? I mean, that's my biggest question.
He was in AAA last year, Rengifo, so he's, you know, one phone call away. And I'm trying to pull up the numbers here real quick, but he's a guy, he's going to stick out because of the stolen base total. Guys, he stole 41 bases last year in 120 or so games. He climbed from high A to triple A last year. Really good plate skills, only struck out at 14% of the time in triple A, which was his high mark. And he walked around 11, 12, 14% in his three stops as well. So I think Rengifo could factor his way in. He'll be 22 when the season starts. So he's not too young or by any means to be up. So I could see Rengifo playing himself into a role. So he's a guy to watch. But, I mean, don't bank on 41 steals. He's a really good base runner, but he's not a plus runner. So I think he can get 15 to 20. You don't have to draft him by any means, but he's a guy to just file away for later. But Cozart is my pick for our criteria here.
I know you
don't like Cozart, but that's just me.
Well, I'm worried about Cozart for a myriad of reasons, but it's fine. No picks is this bad at that point, so it's fine.
That's true. That's a good mantra. There's no such thing as a bad pick after pick 300. So
pretty much. We'll go to Minnesota next, and Tyler Austin's pretty much the only option I will roll with here. You have some really – I mean, the offense has a lot of intriguing pieces, but just a ton of them are going above – top 300. So unfortunately, like, there, a lot of them are just axed out from our criteria. But Tyler Austin, 17 home runs and minimal at bats last year. The contact's going to continue to be a problem, and I think it's never going to go away. That's just kind of the world we live in with Austin. But you have a couple of options or avenues for playing time here. You know, obviously Nelson Cruz is there. The time could kind of run out on his durability at any moment. I'm not saying it will, because he's been just Superman the last few years. But CJ Cron as well is kind of rolling around there, and who knows what happens with him. He's been in a timeshare before. And obviously, you know, Austin is somebody that's capable of playing the outfield as well. That's not the most durable outfield. There's an avenue to him carving out another 300 at bats. And then if he gets 300 at bats, you're looking at probably 20 home runs. So if you're looking for power, he's going fairly late at this point, outside of the top 600. So, I mean, pretty much free, obviously a good amount of power. It's going to come with contact problems, but he also can take a little bit of a walk too. He's not great in the walk rate department, but he's somebody that can do it. So there you go.
Oh man. There's not a lot of fun options here. I'm going to go Jake Cave. he was...
Give me your Jake Cave hot take.
He was really good in a short stint for them last year. And I mean, he's a guy who... He strikes out a lot. But, I mean, you're looking at a guy with... It's an above-average power, above-average speed combination. So I'll take the tools here. And it's not like this outfield is... tough to break into. I mean, if we're being real, Buxton could obviously Buxton himself out. Max Kepler still kind of unproven. So I think Jake Cave and Nelson Cruz is old. Not that I think he's going to break down, but Jake Cave could be a guy. Zach Granite is kind of interesting in the stolen base department. And Michael Reed, kind of the similar guy to Jake Cave in the fact that they are both – do fairly well in projection systems, but aren't getting any love. And I understand it, but if you're in a deeper league, you might need to pay attention to that. And another guy, I guess, is Lucas Duda, who just signed there today in a minor league deal. He could steal some playing time at first base.
He definitely could. I didn't even see that he got signed today, but yeah, there you go. I mean, if he makes the team, then you're looking at a possibility of him carving out a pretty decent role there. Possibly just the strong side of the platoon, which would be awful for CJ Cron owners, but I digress.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Yankees. So there's Don't a couple of options you can go with. I'm going to go with, I mean, the fair option is Didi Gregorius, because I mean, if you're willing to pay outside the top 400 for 3 months, and especially in dynasty leagues, I think if you're looking at it right now in FBC, he's going outside the top 430 or 420, but in regular dynasty leagues, he's probably going near the top 150 area, somewhere in that vicinity, maybe even earlier.
Probably. It should be.
Yeah, I haven't looked at anybody. We have a ton of dynasty leagues going on at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, so I should just dive into one of those ADPs and check out where he's going. But my assumption would be he's in the top 150 area. So if you're in a dynasty, you know, startup dynasty, then you're probably going to end up paying that price. But for redraft, you're essentially paying outside the top 400 for 3 months of Didi Gregorius, and I think that's pretty fair. Could he hit 15 home runs in that time? Sure. He did so in about a month last year. So, right. You never know. I'm not going to go Troy Tulowitzki. I know you wanted me to. I know you're
Say it. I got one. I got mine. And my guy might be one of the best sleepers in all of fantasy baseball right now. He's kind of a boring guy, but, we're looking at going all the way back to 2013, the lowest stolen base total Brett Gardner's had is 16.
Oh, God.
He's been a double-double steal homer threat. Still is. I know it's winding down a little bit. But getting Brett Gardner at pick 337 on the last 30 days seems very criminal to me because he's going to play. He might hit at the top of this lineup, which is another added.
What happens if they sign Machado, though? Are they going to move somebody like Luke Voit out to the outfield, and all of a sudden his playing time gets cut in half?
I mean, it's possible. I think
because Judge, they'll throw in center at times, and then you could throw Stanton in the outfield as well. I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here.
No, I got you, but I mean, I still think Gardner's going to produce more value than a pick at 337 should. You know what I mean? I think he's.
Oh yeah.
So I know it's the boring pick. And probably not the one you're looking for on a show like this, but I have no issue taking Gardner that late. I also want to tell you that don't draft Greg Bird ever. And then
I'll accept defeat there.
Clint Frazier might be a guy.
I was going to say, Clint Frazier obviously dealt with concussion issues. I'm hearing that he looks fine, fully healthy coming into this year.
Right. You know how that goes. That's touch and go, but, I mean, that's – he's a fun name to look at, though. Everyone likes Clint Frazier, and there's good reasons why. He's a 30-homer bat, can hit 260 if he gets up, but it's a problem. He's in probably the deepest organization, so that's troubling for him.
Yeah, I think Clint Frazier, of all the, we're rambling on about, random guys like Brett Gardner and stuff, but I think that Clint Frazier is somebody that we definitely, I think this kind of has to be the year, right? Like, if we're going to expect Frazier to be a substantial fantasy source in the upcoming years, then this has to be the season that we see something, right? Like, even if it's 150 at-bats and, 8 home runs with decent plate skills or, whatever it might be, as long as we see something that is promising, like, this is kind of the year for that, right?
I think so. Hopefully he gets traded, to be honest.
He very well could.
No, that's a cop out, but what is this next team I'm excited to talk about because there's a lot of names that I like.
You want to start it off?
Oakland? Sure. Yeah. I'll give three because I know
that's... Well, they'll take all of them. My goodness.
Okay, fine. I'll take one for right now and then you can double back.
Okay.
I'll go Chad Pinder. Swipe right on Pinder.
That Pinder, was not good. I can't believe I'm laughing at that.
Pinder, for me, all the metrics love him. Batted ball data is really nice on Pinder. I forget what exactly the numbers were, but there was something about like his exit velocity and launch angle. Like they filtered his numbers, and he was with like some of the best sluggers in the game, and then it was Chad Pinder. So it was a weird list, but I took notice of the name, and walks at a good rate, has been a consistent source of, 15, 13 home runs in his brief major league time, can play all over the field. I think he's an interesting flyer for sure. But this team's got a lot of them. But I think Pinder can be a really nice AL-only play and definitely a good mixed play, too, in a deeper league.
Yeah, I think it's pretty crazy that he's going outside. He's going outside the top 500.
Yeah,
which is absurd to me. I had no idea lately. He was going that late.
439 the last 30 days, so he's ticking up a little bit, but still. Yeah,
you and I are different filters, I suppose, but still, I mean, the narrative remains the same. He's not. He doesn't cost anything. My guy would be Franklin Barreto. I'm sure one of your dudes was him, but. I just don't see another scenario where he's as bad as he was last season. And, right now, I guess he's not slid into start. But I think at some point he's going to get playing time. I just think it's just a matter of time at that point. And whenever he does get playing time, I think that he's going to be a good source of multiple things. He's definitely not as bad of a hitter as he's shown in the major leagues. No. And
he's aggressive, though. But
he is aggressive, but there's even more power than I would have ever thought.
There is.
That I, you know, at first I thought he was more of a, you know, 15 home run guy in the minor leagues, and the last couple of years have really kind of opened my eyes a bit. And even Baseball HQ now, they have an upside thing on their baseball forecaster of him hitting possibly 30 home runs. That might be a little rich for me, but it wouldn't shock me as well. So
you know who he could be is Jonathan Scope.
Very, very good possibility of that. Yeah. I mean,
doesn't walk
a lot and right. strikes out a bit, but, you know, could have random decent batting average seasons. Hits a ton of fly balls, though. I mean, last year, even in a limited sample, he hit over 50% fly balls.
Good. I'll take that.
Yeah. And, you know, his power was off the charts as well, you know, based on that contact. So I think that there's I know HQ is kind of driving their numbers from the small sample size that he has in the major leagues the last couple of years. But regardless, I mean, he's somebody that is hitting a ton of fly balls and is hitting them hard when he does so. So if he gets playing time, I think Barreto's even if he doesn't get playing time, draft skills, not roles. And, you know, right now Barreto has some decent skills. He's entering his age 23 season. There's a lot to like with somebody like him that, you know, is obviously free at this moment in time. Dustin Fowler as well. I'm just going to throw a shout out to him.
Damn it. That's the guy I was sitting on. Yep. Fowler, man. There's nothing. I think he can get a 35 combination of 35 homers and steals. 2015, 15, 20, however you want to slice it. I think he can go that way. Nick Martini and Ramon Laureano are in front of him.
Yes.
If you don't know much about them, there's a reason why. Laureano played out of his mind last year when he came up from Oakland, and as did Nick Martini. Martini is a career minor leaguer in the Cardinals organization. He walks extremely well, or extremely high clip, but doesn't really offer much else, a little bit of speed. Fowler's a better player than him. Fowler's a better player than Laureano. I really like Dustin Fowler. He's a perfect reserve outfielder, even if he doesn't make the team, which should play enough in their little rotation. But I'm all about Fowler. The only thing negative here is he might hit 250, and he might have an OBP around like the 315 range. But even if he can do that, I still think, like I said, 35 to 40 stolen bases and homers. Shit, you'll take that all day for this late.
So, he's a really good dynasty asset as well, because I don't hear his name a lot. I just think people are kind of sleeping on him a bit. So I think Fowler's a really decent guy that's just sneaky at this point.
Shit, I mean, last year he only got 200 plate appearances and he went 6-6.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
You don't want to extrapolate that out, but...
No, same time, but that's like, an idea of the skill set, right.
Yeah, he's a 15-15 guy or...
He's a 250 OBP, so he'll be better than that, so...
That won't get it done, but we'll scoff at that. We'll just kind of let that roll over.
Oh yeah, but Dustin Fowler, man, he might be my favorite name we've mentioned on this list as far as upside.
I think he's really solid. I don't know if he's my favorite name, but you know, I have short term memory. I don't even know who I mentioned 10 minutes ago. So let's go to Seattle. I'm gonna choose the old Ray, Tim Beckham, going outside the top 500. Right now, sliding into a starting slot. I said slot twice. I don't know why. But, yeah, he's right now expected to man shortstop for them. You know, he's going to hit in the bottom of the order. But they also have D. Gordon hitting last as well. And I don't know if that's necessarily going to keep up. This is something to look at in spring training, because I have a feeling Seattle's going to move their lineup around a lot. But regardless of what the lineup is, if he gets 500 bats, he's a 20 home run bat. He's got a good amount of power in there. Mm-hmm. Not a ton of speed and not very good plate skills either. I think the, you know, 278 average we saw him have in 2017 is kind of a mirage, but 240 to 250 batting average, 20 home runs, going outside the top 500, definitely more of an AL only a deep league guy, like we're, you know, mentioning in this show. But I think that there's something to like there with, you know, somebody going outside the top 500. He's only 29, you know, not old at this point, you know, why not?
The presence of JP Crawford doesn't scare you?
No, it doesn't at all.
Okay, well, I think that he'll have that job, but there's...
He probably will have it eventually.
Beckham can play anywhere in that infield, so I could see being all right on that. There's not a lot of options in the Seattle, to be honest with you. I'm going to take a guy. I'm completely hedging my bet here on that E5 gets traded. I'm going to take Ryan Healy. Yes, sir. I think, well, nothing... He does nothing great, you know, 18 to 20 homers in a 250, 260 average at first base. not exceptional by any means, but I think if E5 gets dealt, he's going to get that time, and I think we can finally bury the Dan Vogelbach hype, because I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know. That's where I'm at here. This is not a really fun team at all. You want a real deep sleeper? Dylan Moore.
I like Shed Long more than I like J.B. Crawford, if you're talking like, you know, middle. If somebody's going to usurp Beckham, I think it would be Shed Long, but I could be wrong. This is a whole flux. I don't know if they expect to go the whole. I think they're trying to compete, is the thing. I think that's what they're trying to do. So if they're trying to compete, I feel like they are. I mean, they added Jay Bruce, they added E5, they have Domingo Santana there. Tim Beckham's decent defensively. He's not a gold glover or anything, but he's pretty solid defensively. They have, I don't know. I feel like they're trying to compete, but if they go into all out tank mode, you could see guys like Shed Long and J.P. Crawford come up, but maybe Tim Beckham is the wrong choice outside of the top. Maybe he is only going to get like a half a season of playing time. And that's, I'm expecting him to get like 500 at bats, but if he doesn't, then, that's obviously changing things.
Right. And Beckham is a good choice. That would have been my pick if I picked first. So I agree.
It's hard to say. I don't know. The proverbial, he's always going to be the guy I remember as the person we took ahead of Buster Posey. Although it's not looking that bad right now compared to
only 3 World Series.
Yeah. It's not looking as bad. No, I'm just kidding. I'm trying to rationalize it any way I can.
Sounded like you were talking yourself into it for a second, but then realize.
Then after a few seconds, I realized the even year thing that happened like 2 years, 3 years in a row, whatever.
Right.
All right, let's go to Tampa Bay. I suppose I can start. I can go with a myriad of guys. Kevin Kiermaier is my top choice because there's just no way he's as bad as last year. Yandy Diaz is down there. I can go on for a while, so you can go ahead.
I was going to take Kiermaier, too. I just think that power-speed combination is a fun one.
2020 potential, man. 2020.
Yeah, and I fully believe that. Kind of the adult version of what Dustin Fowler can be, right? And I look at Kiermaier, and I think there's no way he can be that bad, and he has to stay healthy at least one of these years, right? Maybe not, but I don't know.
You can automatically take out like my projections right now. I have 100 at bats taken out of his projection, and I still have close to a 2020 stat line for him now. Is 100 at-bats realistic? Probably not based on his track record to this point. But I also think that, obviously I'm showing a little bit of favoritism because I'm a Rays fan in my projection there. But, even if he gets, three, like the last couple of years, he's had, 332, 380, 366 in at-bats. Even if I were to project him safely for, 370 in at-bats, that's still a 15-ish player.
And outside of the top 300, that's gravy, right? If you get anybody on the top 300 that stays on your roster all year in a redraft league, think about that. I mean, right. So, so say he gets hurt in June and whatever, misses a good time. You still prorate 2020 season out till June. You know what I mean? And that's a good player. So I'm with you on the Kiermaier, but I'm going to go Brandon Lau.
I like it.
He won at bat short of rookie eligibility. I think Joey Wendell's getting a lot of love, but I think Brandon Lau is a better player. I think he's a better player. He can play. Also, Tommy Pham and Austin Meadows on the outfield corners are not pillars of health, and Brandon Lau can play either one of those spots. He's a complete hitter. I think he's got good plate skills. He's going to be a healthy 275, 280 hitter. He can hit 20 home runs. He's even the kind of guy who has the ability to barrel balls and have a surprising somewhere in his career. Would it shock you if Brandon Lau hit 30 home runs in a season? It would not for me whatsoever. I think he's got that type of skill set that can take the next level when he climbs up, just because of the quality of contact that he makes. So Brandon Lau is a guy that I'm trying to get anywhere I can. I think number one, he's slept on for this year, but I think he's a hell of a dynasty asset.
Yeah, I really like Lowe as well, or Lau, whichever way.
It's Nathaniel Lowe and Brandon Lau.
Yeah, I think that's what confuses me, but Jada Robertson, I like a lot too, just from because he is going to get kind of the first run from the middle infield and outfield standpoint as far as being a bench bat, and he's kind of the modern day Ben Zobrist of the Rays. I know I've mentioned that on the Rays show, but Robertson's, coming back from injury, he made a lot of gains last season, and I never was really sold on him, but last year really opened my eyes to the player he's become, and kind of he's kind of starting to tap into the ultimate potential that we could expect from him. Not a superstar, not somebody that's going to help you in a lot of ways, but somebody that's pretty good at multiple things, and you know, more so has gotten better in the pop area, and has been able to kind of get some more loft to the ball. And I think that that we're starting to see the benefits of that. Just unfortunately, the guy can never just fucking stay healthy ever.
Yeah, talk to me real quick about Nathaniel Lowe. Is he coming up this year?
Doubt it.
I hope so, because Choi doesn't sound, he's not the most inspiring option at first base. So
you would think. Yeah, I mean, I don't think even Choi is 100% guaranteed to make the roster.
I don't think so either.
If he doesn't make the roster, though, then...
But there's no other natural fit for first.
There's not, but I can see them easily going with Yandy Diaz over there. You know, they could throw Daniel Robertson over there, too. He's played first in his career. There's... Yeah, the Rays are going to Ray. Lowe could come up later. Lowe could come up later. Now I'm getting confused again. But, no, yeah, Lowe could come up later in the year, and that wouldn't shock me. But Lau is definitely the one that has more of a chance to make the roster coming out of spring training.
Agreed on all counts, but I hope we see both of Lau and Lowe this year. I really do.
Oh, we do, too. So I could just... You know, I could just say Lowe is awesome on Twitter, and you'll see who... which I get all the questions from people like, oh, who are you talking about?
And hashtag free Tommy Pham.
Yeah, Tommy Pham, he just seems disgruntled, man. He just seems like upset. I don't know. Man,
you're getting dangerously close to the line with Tommy Pham and talking bad, so you better stop.
No, I love Tommy Pham now that he's a Ray. I can't get enough of him. I love the guy.
Tommy Pham is my favorite player in the big leagues right now.
It's been a little rocky, though, because he already has went on SiriusXM and just completely blasted the Rays fan base. And then on top of that, the Rays took him to arbitration
and they lost. Never lose.
I know. We've lost like four times ever. So it's been a little bit of a rocky, not a rocky start, you know, statistically, because he was great when he came to the Rays, but it was it's been kind of a rocky relationship. I feel like it has been. Maybe it hasn't. And he's, you know, just completely happy with the club and everything. And he's just kind of shouting out because he's upset with the fan base. And I can completely understand that, because the Rays fan base makes me mad at times. But, you know,
he's my boy. Free him.
I love the guy. I'm on board Tommy Pham, as opposed to last season at this time where I was pretty much shitting all over him.
So. Hey, and I proved to be right. I'll take my victory lap.
Yeah, he was solid. I give it up. All right, we're moving on to Texas. Do you have anybody on the top of your head? I haven't looked at Texas real fast.
Everything I know is telling me not to do this, but Willie Calhoun has to eventually break out sometime, right?
I
believe in the bat enough. It's a strong hit tool with power. I mean, he could hit 280 with 25 homers. If he did that next year, that wouldn't surprise me one bit. And I being serious on that, I think he kind of got the runaround last year. He didn't handle it the right way, though, which hurt him. He didn't make the club out of spring training like he thought he had a legit chance. Didn't get called up right away. He got after the trade to LA from LA in 2017, he didn't come up at the end of the year that year, and he thought he should have. 2018, he didn't come up till late. So I'm on this Calhoun train. The round mound of DH town, Willie Calhoun. But, hey, that's a position in the American League team last time I checked. So Shin-Soo Chu is going to be 37 pretty quick. So I'm going to count on Calhoun taking that job. I think it's his job, and I think he can hit. So I'm on board.
I don't even think he necessarily needs to take the job to produce value for this season. He can easily produce a pretty good amount of value just by having 250 to 300 at-bats. And, you know, again, especially in deep formats, that's certainly useful. I'm definitely on board the Willie Calhoun bandwagon still. I understand all the defensive limitations, and, I know he's not, you know, somebody that you can trot out really to any position at this point, but – he can DH. He might be somebody that's up for a trade as well. Maybe Texas ends up dealing him to another team. You never know. But the bat is real. He's definitely not as bad as last season. I just don't see how that's possible. I think that he's a much better hitter than what he displayed in 2018. So I definitely will put some faith into Calhoun that he's able to right the ship this season. And as far as my guy goes, I mean, I can go to Lionel DeShields. I think that's a pretty safe pick.
I almost went to Shields.
But I think that's pretty much too obvious. Now, I do want to ask you about, it looks like Patrick Wisdom is on their bench
sure.
to start the year. And I'm wondering, you know, obviously he's an all power, no, you know, he's kind of like an all or nothing guy, but, you know, say, I mean, who's in the middle infield here? You have Asdrubal Cabrera, you have Rougned Odor, Elvis Andrews. I mean, that's not like the best players in terms of bills of health. Right. You know, say Patrick Wisdom gets himself 300 at bats. Can he hit 20 home runs?
Yes. And file this name away for DFS because Wisdom destroys lefties.
Yeah, there you go. So that's some pretty good guys for Texas. You have, you know, Willie Cabrera, yeah. Patrick Wisdom, and Delino DeShields Jr. Those are all pretty decent options, in my opinion, for Dynasty.
Yeah, Wisdom's a exit velocity guy. Cardinals like that. He hits the ball hard consistently. Just a little bit of swing and miss in the game, though, and that's the hindrance for him.
Yeah, well, likewise for most people in the major leagues
right.
at this point.
Right, that's what the era we're in.
Let's go to Toronto, and there's multiple guys you can kind of go with here on this team. If I have to nail it down to one, I suppose I will go. Man, I want to go Teoscar Hernandez, but I kind of don't at the same time. Yeah, I mean,
it's easy choice for me.
I'm sure it is. I'm going to talk about Rowdy Tellez because I like Rowdy Tellez and I always have. So I'll talk about Rowdy Tellez. I think that he's somebody that, you know, probably will not get a good amount of time, you know, full time this year, but I think that he'll be able to carve out a role. It's kind of shitty because last year he did multiple things and was pretty solid for, I don't know, he only had 100 at bats, but like he was pretty solid for the majority of them. I know right now he's not slated to start in the major league squad, but I don't see any reason that Toronto's not going to bring some of their young guys up. And you know, he's only 24 in, you know, 70 at bats. He hit 4 home runs and hit .314. That's obviously not his true batting average upside, but I think that he has, you know, the ability to hit 20 to 25 home runs and hit for a pretty decent batting average. He didn't walk a ton last year in the major leagues, but I think he's kind of just slept on, and I like Tellez still. So I guess I just want to throw a shout out to him.
Yeah, Tellez was almost eliminated off my prospect list due to non-production until the big second half last year saved him. So he put together a really nice second half in Toronto and still doesn't have a job on a rebuilding team, which is kind of discouraging. But Kendrys Morales is my pick here.
Yeah.
Because he's a dinosaur, but he's a guy that's going to contribute. The last 2 years, he's hit around .250, which is fine. The walk rate spiked up this past year, which I don't expect to repeat. But if he stays healthy, he's a lock for 22 to 25 homers. So, I mean.
Yeah, my only thought with him is that he can easily get traded to a team where he's pinch hitting.
Yep.
100%. You know, he's in his age 36 season. And, you know, because Kendrys Morales was my top pick. Like, I'm sitting here looking at the ADPs. And I'm like, okay, who would I take of this list if I'm doing a redraft? You know, obviously Kendrys Morales. You know, but that I do kind of worry about the long term role for him on this team as far as.
I'll give you one more.
Well, there's a ton of guys. I think that we can. What I think we should do is just kind of, you know, throw a couple more names out there for Toronto. We'll tie a bow on this thing, and you know, maybe next week when Justin's back, we'll go through some NL guys.
All right, we can do that. Billy McKinney.
Yep.
I'm intrigued a little bit, and the projections have him hitting leadoff, which I don't necessarily buy. But Billy McKinney can do a little bit of everything on offense. Batted ball data has even made a turn in the right direction here. He's pulling the ball more. He's hitting the ball in the air 40% of the time, which if he could tick that up a little bit to about 45%, I think he can hit 20 home runs. I'm a fan of McKinney's skill set, bat to ball. The strikeout rate should be low 20%, which we don't see very much of nowadays. He's going to be a positive guy in the walk rate area. The only thing is he's a corner outfielder without traditional corner outfield pop. Or the speed to make up for it. But what he has is a strong hit tool, and I think that's a good foundation for McKinney.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, they have a couple of guys that you can, you know, take flyers on. Brandon Drury is rolling around in there. Now, the problem with him is he's kind of just the stopgap for Vlad, you would assume, right, at least, for right now. But
if you draft
Vlad,
draft Drury late. So you
why not?
Yourself.
And I think that, you know, Drury still possesses some skills, not enough to be a, you know, high upside play in fantasy, but just somebody, you know, to kind of pass the time until Vlad comes by. Devon Travis, I still have some hope for. I think that just based on the fact that he's going outside the, you know, top 600 or 640 at this point, it kind of tells me that, you know, you can at least kind of take a flyer. He could find a way to carve himself into decent playing time and, you know, possibly the Blue Jays' plans of the future. They signed Freddie Galvis, you know, to man shortstop for them. And second base, it looks like they're going to take their chances with Lourdes Gurriel, but I'm not necessarily sold on him. So Devin Travis, I think, is somebody just not to forget about. I'm not necessarily putting a stamp of approval that I think he's going to end up being, you know, a significant fantasy piece or anything, but I do think it's somebody that you should kind of just file away. He's still fairly young at this point, 28. I mean, it's not like his career's over. He could get traded as well, so, you know, just keep your eyes on him, I guess. Keep your name.
Yeah, I like that pick. Yeah, Devin Travis is a solid choice.
You have anybody else from this team?
Not really. I would have said Pompey or Alford in the outfield, but neither of them can stay healthy. So, and yeah, Alford has seen the skills regressing at an alarming rate. So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, this is kind of the year that you know, you would assume Biggio, Bo Bichette, and Vlad are up at some point.
I don't think we'll see Bo this year.
It's a possibility.
I think we'll see Bichette. I think we'll see Biggio. And obviously, hopefully we see Vlad sooner than later. But I don't necessarily trust that either.
You think it's going to take a while? Or
it might. Because I think they're going to play the Super 2 game on top of everything.
Well, sure. Yeah.
So they have no aspirations of competing this year. I mean, there's free agents out there that would make this team infinitely better. And their division and everything, and it's not a good immediate outlook for Toronto. So I could see them waiting until June 1st or so for Vlad, and I think that would cause a lot of riots. But I think it could happen.
Definitely could, and I think that that's probably likely. So, you know, taking him in the top 40 like he is right now is probably not the best bet for redraft, but, you know, it's a gamble play. It worked out for Acuna last year, and it's going to work out for other guys. It's also not going to work out for other guys in the future as well. So, you know, we'll kind of go with it as it may. Right. All right, Matt, let everybody know where you're working on and where you can be reached again.
Trying to survive this crazy weather, and I'm in Chicago. So we had a polar vortex. Now we have an ice storm right now, so everything is coated in ice. So it's fun. Going to be fun to commute in the morning. But MD Tomp FWFB, we'll be gearing up on our dynasty stuff over at Prospects Live, and we'll do a little bit of stuff over here at Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And as always, buy our draft guide, which is doing extremely well. So thank you to everyone that's already purchased it, and we're going to keep updating it for you.
Yeah, absolutely. The draft guide's been amazing. And yes, every single one of you that have purchased it, we appreciate it. And we also appreciate you listening and, you know, helping support Friends with Fantasy Benefits and Prospects Live, like, you know, Matt mentioned. And great work over there. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. I'll be doing my Fangraphs and Baseball HQ thing this year. And obviously you'll listen to me on this show and probably some others as the season approaches. But yeah, we're getting into that time. We didn't even mention, you know, pitchers and catchers reported today. So, you know, we're really at that time, dude.
Yeah. And we're also at the best shape of their lifetime, best shape of your life season. And Matt Duffy has added 23 pounds.
Great. Just another 23 pounds for him to hurt his ankle on. So that's a, that's great. And Troy Tulowitzki is going to start shortstop for the Yankees. Who knew? If only it was until they signed Machado. If only it was 2005. All right. Well, for Matt and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.